Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
I was working the night shift when it happened. I patrolled all the little sections in the park for wildlife disturbance and vandalism in the dark. That's what most people with bad intentions come out to do. It was really quiet one night when my radio went off, saying that there had been reports of screaming over by a bee campsite, right near the forest. When I arrived, it had stopped, but the people there were still shaken up. And they had reported this loud growling and guttural sounds coming out of the trees. Of course, when I got there, they were all standing around the fire, but nobody was talking or anything just before their screams, which had woken everybody up. People at Campsite B said they also saw somebody running across the road in front of them, only to disappear in the brush. This had occurred between Campsites A and C. They too stopped their car to investigate what was going on. It happened so quickly that nobody could really get a good look. People from Sida said something ran past them too and started screaming. They could not tell what it was, and none of these people knew each other, nor had they met before this trip. They were all just random folks spending a weekend at the park. So I followed the path that whatever had run across to see if I could find any tracks or anything. It was nearly impossible. All the ground was so hard, and there were lots of people milling about. The campsite for B is near a bunch of dense woods within the park, so it wasn't too surprising something made its way over there. I checked out campsite since it was next and the closest to where the paths had crossed, but again, nothing turned up. The whole experience felt really strange. Everybody seemed genuinely freaked out outside their tents, but they wouldn't talk much at all. They just kept staring into the black trees with their flashlights, looking for something, waiting for something to come out of the darkness. It was definitely eerie and extremely quiet. I kept my radio on me, thinking we would hear something, but we never did. Although the time I was there, I did not hear anything out of the ordinary. That night, we went home a few hours before sunrise since most people were still awake. The next day, everybody at that campsite packed up pretty quickly, leaving as fast as they could. I guess I had heard from the overnight ranger that this campsite saw something that terrorized their tent. I haven't really heard much about it since then, but apparently, whatever they saw really spooked them. It's a darn shame. I hope whatever it is does not drive traffic away. And people do enjoy camping all year round, so hopefully, whatever large animal this is goes away on its own. I'm hoping it's just maybe a moose or something, and that maybe these people just got spooked. It is the woods, after all, and people's nerves are a lot more on edge when they're out in the darkness or encountering things they don't quite understand. Hey, my name is Levy. I've never done this before, but people need to know what's out there. It's likely that you've heard of such monsters as skinwalkers, Wendigo, Bigfoot, but you choose to believe that creatures of that kind could never roam the earth, that humans are the top of the food chain, that we rule this planet. Though comforting, this mindset will not save you when you come face to face with a nightmare. When you realize how weak and helpless you truly are, it will be too late. My long-distance girlfriend Tay, who is studying on the other side of the country, was visiting her parents in my town. It was my first time meeting them, and it went the way everyone wants it to go. I don't mean to brag, but they loved me, and they were really nice. When it got late and I was getting ready to go home, Tay's mom offered for me to stay while Tay was in town so that we could spend as much time as possible together until she has to go back to school. Tay looked at me excitedly, and I asked, "Are you sure?" "I don't want to be a burden, nonsense, Levy," Tay's mom says. "We think you and Tay are perfect together, and we know how much she misses you when she's gone. Make the most of each other." Tay hugs her mom, and then pulls me and her dad into the hug. It was a beautiful moment, but I can't look at it now without it being tainted by the events that followed. The next few days were perfect. I spent more time with Tay than I ever had before. It was hard with her being so far away most of the time. FaceTime can only do so much to quench the emptiness I felt without her. But for these few days, life felt complete. I hung out with her family. We played card games for hours. I helped her dad fix his motorbike. Well, I say helped. I mostly just held the flashlight and handed him tools. But I think I won him over that day. He probably would have gave me his blessing in marriage if I had asked. That night we were all sat around the TV watching the new Lightyear movie, which was surprisingly good. I'd be lying if I said I didn't shed a few tears around 11:18 p.m. when the movie finished. Tay's parents said goodnight and headed off to bed, and a couple of Tay's friends who had been visiting said goodbye and drove home. I got up to get some water from the kitchen, and as I walked back I stood in the doorway that separated the kitchen from the living room, which was dark, only lit by the TV, allowing me to see Tay frozen, staring towards the window which was out of my direct line of sight. Confused, I peeked my head out of the doorway and looked toward the window. I froze and dropped my glass. Luckily, it landed on the carpet and didn't make much of a noise, and the giant pale creature standing an inch from the window didn't notice. The creature was foul, a gaunt, lanky humanoid. Well, at least the head and torso was humanoid. It had no legs. The torso ended in a stump. The body was being held up by four arms, each one probably 2 meters long. The creature's whole body was covered in gray skin stretched tightly over its abnormally long bones. The thing had no hair anywhere. Its mouth was strangely wide, stretching around to where its ears would be if it had them, and its eyes were just sunken in kai black pits in its head. But I could tell it was just staring at Tay, who had tears rolling down her face. She slowly turned her head to look at me. She was shaking and breathing quickly. "Levy," she whimpered, "help." I had never felt so powerless. I'm a 6'2", lean but muscular 20-year-old guy. I was supposed to protect her. I always thought I could, and I would die to protect her. But I had no idea how to protect her from whatever this thing was. Then I had an idea. I looked to the light switch panel to my left. I knew one of them was the porch light, but there were three others: the living room light, the kitchen light, and the hall light. If I pressed the wrong light, I don't know what the thing will do, but I had to try. I had to remember. Which light did I see Tay's dad used to turn the porch light on when he went out last night? I reached for the light second from the bottom and flicked the switch. The hall light turned on. Luckily, the hall is on the opposite side of the kitchen to where the living room is, and it is out of view for the creature at the window. But I can't mess up again. If the kitchen light turns on, the creature will see me, and if the living room light turns on, it might cause it to attack Tay. I looked back to the creature, which was reaching using one of its hands to scratch the window. I had to do something. I reached for the bottom light switch and flicked it. The porch light turned on. The creature spun around to face it and let out a screech that will haunt my nightmares for the rest of my life. I ran to Tay and grabbed her, dragging her off the side of the couch where there was about a meter gap between the armrest of the couch and the wall. And I held her. What else could I do? I can't fight the thing. We can't outrun it. Does Tay know how scared I am? Can she feel my heart running laps in my chest? I want her to feel safe, like nothing can hurt her when I'm there. But that's clearly not true. The sound of the window smashing fills the house and Tay cries into my shoulder. I hold her tightly. I kiss the top of her head and I wait quietly. I can't see anything. It's pitch darkness besides the slight blue glare from the TV on the wall above us. But I can hear raspy breathing and bones cracking as the thing searches the living room. I hear it sniffing the couch where Tay was sitting, and I hear it make its way closer to the end of the couch, one of its hands pressed on the wall above us. The closer it gets, the less scared I become. All that fear is replaced by anger. This thing wants to hurt the person I love with all of my heart. It wants to take the one thing that makes me happy. I would die for this girl, and I will die for this girl. I kiss her one more time and get myself into a defensive position so that I can easily tackle it before it reaches Tay. And as I see the silhouette of its head begin to peek over the side of the couch, suddenly the light turns on and Tay's dad yells as he sees us from the kitchen while he's holding a shotgun. The creature runs at him, but falls to the ground as one of its arms is obliterated at the shoulder. After Tay's dad fires a shot, the creature shakes around on the ground like a fly without wings, before it grabs the TV in one of its hands and flings it effortlessly at Tay's dad, sending him flying into the kitchen counter behind him. The creature quickly sprints out of the window and unleashes a final screech as it disappears into the tree line behind the house. And here we are. I'm sitting at the hospital with Tay and her family. Her dad has a broken jaw, two broken collarbones, six cracked ribs, two broken vertebrae in his back, and a broken pelvis. He's sleeping right now due to the meds he's on, but he's supposed to recover, though he likely won't be able to walk for a while, if ever again. This whole thing happened around 5 hours ago. It's 4:38 a.m. as I'm writing this. The police left a while ago after telling us we can't go back to the house for a while. I don't know what that thing was, but it's safe to say we are not the dominant species in this world. There are things bigger than us, stronger than us. Things you couldn't dream of. You think you can protect yourself, your family. The only difference between you and a rabbit being hunted by a wolf is that the rabbit knows that it's in danger, and the rabbit is running for its life. I was laying down in the truck at a pilot truck stop about 9 miles south of Eshtabula, Ohio, on October 3, 2018 at 1 p.m. I always cover my windows to keep all lights out and lock all the doors. I had backed in, so the front of my truck was facing the storefront. Typically, I'm out by 11:30 p.m., but I kept getting a ringing sound in my right ear and was having trouble with my knee previous injury, unrelated. The last thing I remember is starting the truck around 12:30 a.m. to let the heat run. Then, it seemed almost instantly I was floating onto a table. The table felt high up, maybe 5-6 feet. I couldn't move anything. My head was turned to my right shoulder. It felt locked there. I was overwhelmed with fear and could feel myself attempting to cry out for help. Two very small 3.54-foot gray-skinned creatures were to my right that I could see. Everyone describes gray aliens differently than these guys looked. Their entire body was stubby, and their heads were almost too short for their eyes, which were very large like other people described. It was moreover the shape of their face that looked different than typical photos you see. The photos you typically see show them elongated in the face. These two looked like it was almost smushed down and like they were squinting with wrinkles between the eyes. I couldn't speak or cry out, but I started to realize what was going on. So I thought in my head best way to describe it for them to please help me relax. I understood what was going on, but I could not calm down. Once I thought that, I could move my arms. So I reached out towards one with my right arm, and it held my hand. I did the same with my left arm, and although I couldn't see it, something grabbed my left hand. Their hands were very soft but cold and felt kind of like a toddler's hand. Once I was holding with both my hands, I could not stop smiling. I was completely relaxed, and all I could feel was happiness. The one holding my hand on the right, I believe, is the one who was talking to me. It asked if I was sure that I wanted to remember this time, and I told it I was not sure. It was then that I realized that I'd been visited several times before. I believe the first time was when I was 5. I recalled a small devil-like creature coming through the wall of my room. I had a bunk bed with no bottom bed, and it just floated straight up to my face. I immediately screamed. My dad came running in and found me in the far corner by my closet door. Being a kid, I told him the devil came for me. Now that I'm older, I realize it wasn't a devil. It was one of those creatures. The next incident wasn't until I was 9 to 10 years old. As I was going upstairs to bed, I stopped at the landing. Outside of the window, there was a saucer-shaped disc, silver in color, with a large orange dome on top of it. I thought that I had immediately gone downstairs to get my dad. But when I went to go get him to tell him what happened, he asked what I was doing still up. Apparently, I had been upstairs for almost an hour. I thought it was only a matter of seconds. After telling my dad what had happened, he grabbed our old VCR camcorder, went upstairs with me, and videotaped this craft which was still hovering outside the window. After about 10 to 15 seconds, it shot off and was gone. My dad went downstairs and called Airborne Express, which is the local DHL-type company that was in business at the time. He reported the incident to them as well as Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. No one reported seeing it. They said that nothing was showing up on radars around that time, and that it was probably a coincidence. However, the next morning when we woke up, nothing was on the tape whatsoever. On top of that, we had a large pine tree outside of that window. It was lying on the ground and completely black on one side, like it immediately burnt partially and then died. There was no other scaring to the ground. Back to the present. So I'm laying on the table and I can feel other hands around me on my legs, arms, ears, and then I feel a hard pressure around my genitals. Like a pump, but with pain, like heat, pain. I'm completely distracted while all this is going on though, because the creature to my left is now alone. It's just me and him in my view. He's telling me all kinds of things about meeting me in the past, but I can't recall what he was saying. I do recall him saying that I would forget things if I wasn't ready, and unfortunately, he had no control over whether or not I would remember. He could only allow me to remember what I wanted to remember. About the time that I really calmed down and stopped feeling like I was going to have a heart attack, everyone was gone. I woke up in the truck laying on my back on top of my blankets. The truck was still running, but every light on the dash was lit up and alarms were going off on it. So I shut it off thinking it was overheating. I turned it back on a couple seconds later and everything was fine. The whole ordeal did not come to me until after I realized the truck was okay. I immediately started freaking out, and then I heard the same voice again telling me everything was okay and he would see me soon. I feel like over the years I have developed a friendship possibly with this creature, but I'm not sure of that. Honestly, I'm not really sure I even believe myself. However, I can tell you that those other two instances definitely did occur when I was younger, and I always wanted to know why they happened. I've always had an interest in aliens, but nothing more than any other young boy does. I've never fantasized about being abducted. I've honestly been freaked out about the thought of it, so I don't think that my mind is playing tricks on me or that I had a dream. Another note to add is I do not think that these creatures had a gender. The only reason why I say that is the voice in my head that was talking to me did not appear to be male or female. I did wake up with a slight nosebleed in my right nostril. I had a headache and continued to have a headache all day. I had very uncomfortable pressure internally. I do not drink alcohol. I do not do drugs. And to the best of my knowledge, I have no mental illness from either side of my family that is known. I have never been a sleepwalker, and I don't tend to have very many nightmares. I wish I could remember more of what happened. Although I would definitely be terrified if this occurs again, I hope that I can be more open to it when it does, though. I know they will be back because I recall the creature saying it would see me again. The beginning of the encounter was very intrusive, and it felt embarrassing. They seemed to just do what they needed to do, and then they comforted me. I will say that I agree with others about the whole pure love feeling. I definitely felt as though it possibly genuinely cared about me. I'm not entirely sure that it did, but it was a very comforting feeling. One other thing I do recall it asking me was if I remembered them fixing me when I ruined my ability to reproduce. I didn't answer that I'm aware of, but I think I know what they were talking about. When I was on a deployment to Iraq, we would restart the radars standing in range of them. We were warned if we did that we could become sterile. So I used to do it every day joking that I did not need to have any more kids, as I had already had 3 at the time. I did wake up several nights with nosebleeds in Iraq, but in my opinion, I believe at least most of those were due to the desert air. I hope my story will help in some way, shape, or form. These are not all of the details of this event. I'm not very good at writing out things, and I only wanted to write out what I was sure of. I looked at the frayed end of my puppy's leash and sighed. The leash had been thrown in with the kennel I bought when I bought Picard, my Pomeranian. It had been old and ratty, but I figured it would work just as well as a new one. Apparently, I was wrong. I'd only had Picard for 2 months. The leash was dead, and he was having a grand time somewhere in the woods behind my apartment complex. He was a good puppy, but also a hyperactive one, and I was worried he would wear himself out and get lost. So I pushed through the undergrowth in the direction that he had scampered off. "Picard," I called out. "Come on, boy, it's going to be nighttime. You need to come get dinner." It had been half an hour, and I was starting to get a little bit worried and a little bit upset. I didn't know what I would do when I found the little guy, but at this point I was just hoping I would find him at all. The sun hadn't completely set, but it would in less than an hour, and after I found Picard I would have to find my way back out of the woods. From the road or the apartments, the massive trees looked quaint and contained, but from inside of it the forest seemed huge and imposing. Some of the trees had long scratches on them, usually a few feet above my head, or places a little lower where the bark had been torn off in ragged strips. All the branches up to about 8 feet high had been broken off and piled around the bases of the trees, and I wondered who had done it and why. It must have taken days of effort for some landscaper to accomplish, and for what purpose? As far as I knew, no one came out here, not even the kids who lived in the apartments. Come to think of it, I hadn't even seen any animals in the woods since I moved in. I'd never noticed it, but now that the thought had entered my head, it was unsettling. Even if the forest was too small for deer, shouldn't there be squirrels or possums or something? I took another look at some of the scratches high on the trees. What were they? Most of them were groups of two parallel lines, gouged deep into the living wood of the trees. Bears had more than two claws, I knew that. Was it something done by whomever had broken off the low branches? I reached up to touch an overhanging branch. It was just out of reach. I was a tall guy, 6 feet even. Most people wouldn't be able to reach the branches. Maybe the manager of the apartments didn't want people climbing the trees. Pickard, here, puppy, let's go get a treat. I didn't want to be here anymore. I wanted to take my dog and go home. The sun was getting very low in the sky, and I absolutely did not want to be in these woods after dark. There couldn't be anything to worry about. Nothing scarier than skunks lived in my state. But at this point, I no longer cared. This place was wrong somehow, and even the squirrels knew it. Pickard, come, I heard dead leaves rustle behind me. I turned to look. Pickard, good do. It wasn't Pickard. The thing I saw was tall, 8 feet at least. The branches overhead brushed its wolf-like ears. It was covered in thick fur, gray and mossy green, and it stood on 2 feet like a person. For a brief instant, I thought it must be a Bigfoot, but then I looked at its face, into its eyes, its four eyes.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
They were small and crimson, arranged in a band across its face where a human's nose would be. Its wide frog-like mouth split, and its entire head seemed to gape open to reveal hundreds, thousands of teeth like knitting needles as a thick tongue like a twisted handkerchief thrust out and licked slowly across its lips. It took a horrible shuddering step towards me, and I took two back. It blinked, each eye from left to right taking a turn in sequence. Then it raised its long, long arm towards me. I felt my back hit against a tree and thought, maybe I could climb up, wait for this thing to leave, for someone else to come, even though I knew no one would. But there were no branches in reach, and I suddenly realized why. I shouted at the thing to stop, but it ignored me. It took another step towards me, then a third, its paw outstretched with two thick, curved claws extended. I closed my eyes. There was nothing I could do. Then I heard a low whine and a bark. Pickard. Great. Not only was this thing going to eat me, but my little dog too. I opened my eyes and started to shout at Pickard to run, but the thing was standing there covering its ears. Pickard barked again, and the creature howled in what seemed like pain. Pickard began barking incessantly, frantically, and the horror fled, running deeper into its terrible woods. Pickard trotted over to me, his tail wagging, the other end of the leash still clipped to his collar. What a good boy, Pickard. What a good boy. I hugged him close. We were both shaking as I tied the two ends of the leash together, and we ran home in the dark. Sometimes, from my window, I watched the woods. I never see animals, but sometimes there are new scratches, high on the trees. And when my neighbor complains about Picard barking in the night, I just smile and nod and apologize and slip my dog an extra treat. I still remember the day I lost my friend, Mike. We were on a Navy SEAL mission in Wyoming, tracking down a terrorist cell that had a hidden base in the mountains. We were hiking through the snow when we heard a loud explosion. We turned around and saw a huge fireball engulfing our chopper. It had been hit by a rocket launcher. We knew we had to get out of there fast, before the enemy found us. We split up into two groups, Mike and I in one, and the others in another. We agreed to meet at a rendezvous point, where another chopper would pick us up. We ran as fast as we could, dodging bullets and grenades. We reached a cave, where we decided to take cover for a while. We checked our radios, but they were jammed. We had no way of contacting the others. We waited for a few minutes, hoping that the coast was clear. Then we heard a roar, a loud, inhuman roar that made our blood run cold. We looked at each other and grabbed our guns. Something was coming. We saw a shadow moving in the darkness. It was big and fast. It leaped out of the cave and landed in front of us. It was a creature unlike anything we had ever seen. It had the body of a bear, but the head of a wolf. It had claws, fangs, and spikes all over its fur. It had red eyes that glowed with malice. It snarled at us and charged. We opened fire, but it seemed to have no effect. The bullets bounced off its skin as if it was wearing armor. It swiped at Mike and knocked him down. It bit his leg and dragged him into the cave. I screamed and followed them. I fired at the creature, but it ignored me. It reached the end of the cave, where there was a metal door. It slammed the door shut and locked it. I heard Mike's muffled cries and the creature's growls. I banged on the door and shouted, "Mike, Mike, hang on, buddy, I'm coming for you." I tried to break the door, but it was too strong. I looked around and saw a keypad. It had a code that I didn't know. I tried to guess it, but it was useless. I was running out of time. I gave up and slumped to the floor. I felt tears in my eyes and anger in my heart. I had failed my friend. I had failed my mission. I had failed my country. I don't know how long I stayed there until I heard a helicopter. It was our rescue team. They had found me and took me away. They asked me what happened, but I couldn't tell them. I was in shock. I was in denial. I was in grief. They took me to a hospital where they treated my wounds. They told me that the others had made it out alive, but they couldn't find Mike. They said he was missing in action, presumed dead. They said they would keep looking for him, but I knew they wouldn't. I knew he was gone. They gave me a medal and a discharge. They said I was a hero and a survivor. They said I should be proud and move on. They said they were sorry and left me alone. I didn't feel like a hero. I felt like a failure. I didn't want to move on. I wanted to go back. I didn't want their sympathy. I wanted their answers. What was that creature? Where did it come from? Why did it take Mike? What did it do to him? I needed to know. I needed to find out. I needed to avenge him. I spent the next few years searching for clues. I hacked into military databases and scoured the internet. I contacted former SEAL buddies and shady informants. I followed leads and chased rumors. I learned things that I wished I hadn't. I learned that the creature was part of a secret military program called Project Chimera. It was an experiment to create super soldiers by combining human and animal DNA and enhancing them with nanobots. Nanobots that could make them stronger, faster, and more lethal, but also more susceptible to hacking and remote control. I learned that Mike was not the only one who was taken by the creature. There were others who had gone missing in similar circumstances. They were all SEALs who had been on missions in remote areas. They were all captured and turned into chimeras. I learned that the program was run by a rogue general who had a twisted vision of the future. He wanted to create an army of chimeras that he could control with a device called the Master. He wanted to use them to overthrow the government and start a new world order. I learned that he had a base in the same mountain range where I had lost Mike. He had a lab where he performed his experiments. He had a vault where he stored his chimeras. He had a plan to unleash them on the world. I learned that he was about to execute his plan in a few days. He had a target, a small town in Wyoming, where he would test his chimeras. He had a date, New Year's Eve, when he would launch his attack. I learned that I had to stop him. I had to stop him before it was too late. I had to stop him for Mike. I gathered my gear and headed to Wyoming. I contacted some of my old SEAL buddies who agreed to help me. They were loyal and brave. They were the best and the only ones I could trust. We arrived at the town and set up our base. We scouted the area and located the enemy's base. We planned our strategy and prepared our weapons. We waited for the night and prayed for the best. We attacked at midnight when the fireworks started. We used the noise and the chaos to our advantage. We infiltrated the base and fought our way through. We reached the lab and planted the explosives. We reached the vault and opened the door. We saw them. The chimeras. There were dozens of them in cages. They were all different, but all the same. They were all monsters, but all human. They were all enemies, but all friends. We saw Mike. He was in a cage in the corner. He was different from the others. He was bigger and stronger. He was the alpha and the leader. He was the first and the last. He had changed beyond recognition. He looked like half RoboCop, half human, with weird brain implants in his head. He snarled at us and broke his cage. He freed the other creatures and led them to us. They attacked us and showed no mercy. We fought back and gave it our all. We fired at them and tried to hit their weak spots. We aimed for the small electric circuit near their heads, where their brain implants were. We knew it was the only way to kill them. We killed some of them, but not all of them. They were too many and too fast. In the end, we cleansed the base, but their leader escaped. We called for a backup, and Chopper finally arrived. It led us to safety. While on evac, some government official threatened us if we tell what happened to anyone. So I live in West Virginia, and I was walking to a neighbor's house, and as I was walking, I look up at the mountains which are everywhere around her. And one of the mountains I focused on, I seen a white orb-looking thing. It was probably 100 feet above the ground. It was probably the size of an average garbage bag. I watched it float through the air for a good minute, and I couldn't figure out what it was. Also, there was no wind at the time. All right, so just for context, me, my sister, and my mom were coming back from Indio, California from a stay at a hotel because it's pretty barren out there and it's creepy AF in the hotel because it's so quiet. Adding to that, we just didn't want her to be alone at the hotel because things happen. So yesterday night on Thursday, we drove back home. It was like an hour and 40 minutes, maybe 30 minutes. We get home, bring our small amount of luggage in, say hi to my dad and brother, relax and just prepare for bed. So skip maybe an hour or two. It was probably 12:30 a.m. or 1 a.m. Me, my brother, and my sister all share one room and we're already in bed. We're just on our phones doing our own thing. We have this little fan that doesn't make much noise and we had opened the window for fresh air. After maybe 10 minutes or so, my brother says, "I'm going to go to the bathroom. I'll be back." He gets up and leaves to do whatever he needs to do. Now it's just me and my sister in the room, and 2 minutes after my brother leaves, we hear this constant clinking sound. It wasn't inconsistent or anything, but we'd hear a clink, a 2 second rest, and then another clink for what seemed to be a good 10 or 15 minute time span. So meanwhile, all this me and my sister wonder what it is, so she tells me to slowly close the window. I do that, and we could still hear the clinking. And meanwhile, all of this me and my sister feel a sense of unease and heavy-heartedness. My brother comes back, I tell him, and he turns off the fan, and we just sit in bed quietly listening while he looks out the shutters. He asks me if we locked the door, and I said I'm not sure, so he goes downstairs. Chex comes back up and tells me to make sure to lock the top lock. We're sitting here listening, and he looks out the window and claims something moved outside. Now keep in mind, we leave maybe 2 or 3 minutes away from the San Gabriel Mountains, so it could have just been a coyote or some kind of animal walking around, because coyotes and other animals do often come down from the mountains for whatever reason. We fall asleep, and the following morning my brother tells me that he could hear the clinking sound better, and it sounded louder downstairs as it was down our driveway. Also, this clinking sound sounded like some kind of wood hitting each. We don't exactly have any sightings. We just heard something at night that seemed to make us uneasy. Anyone know what this could be? I've been threatened by law enforcement and political leaders in our area for my continued mention of the Hairy People. We own a small plot of land in the foothills of the Appalachian Mountains, Calhoun County, West Virginia. We've got over 60 acres. It's been in my family for generations. I have a story to tell you about my brother and his friend that happened just 3 years ago. My brother didn't believe me about not crossing into the Hairy People's Valley. He is ex-military. They decided to hunt and camp right on the line where we don't cross. They camped too close to these monsters. Well, they found out the hard way that these beasts mean business. They woke up at 3 in the morning hearing their 2 large pit bull dogs being ripped to pieces. They came home crying for all of us to go with them and wipe out the whole family of these hairy beings. I explained to him that we've seen at least 30 of them going into the caves where they live. I know if we started a war with these hairy people, we will lose. They can hide in these miles of caves, then come out and come after whoever they want when they want. You will receive no help from the government or the cops. It's just an unwritten law for some reason. I don't know why, but I know it's true. Please share my story. People need to know that they are not only fighting these monsters, but for some reason we are fighting the very people who are supposed to keep us safe. I'm sure I'll be catching hell from our local law enforcement, but I'm beyond giving a damn. I'm ready to speak up and start talking about these dangerous hairy people. I like traveling alone. My RV camper is my home. I just love the look of the open road that's stretched endlessly as I maneuver my RV through the vast landscapes. I'm Sarah, a solo traveler seeking solace in the simplicity of the journey. Hours had passed since I last parked, and the exhaustion finally caught up with me. In need of rest, I decided to settle in a remote location, far from the hustle and bustle of civilization. As the sun dipped below the horizon, I parked my RV near remote wilderness. The quiet solitude was both calming and eerie. I prepared a simple meal, gazing out at the beauty surrounding me. That's when I noticed a car parked nearby, inconspicuous at first. I shrugged off the initial unease, convincing myself it was another traveler seeking a quiet spot for the night. Night fell, and I crawled into my makeshift bed, the coziness of my RV providing a semblance of security. However, as the hours ticked away, an unsettling feeling crept over me. A subtle discomfort settled in my gut, and I couldn't shake the sensation of being watched. I dismissed it as paranoia, a byproduct of fatigue, and attempted to succumb to the embrace of sleep. In the dead of night, a strange noise jolted me awake. It was a sound foreign to the stillness, a whisper on the wind, a creak of metal. My heart pounded as I strained to listen, realizing the noise was just outside my RV. Panic seized me as I cautiously approached the window, peering into the darkness. A shadowy humanoid-like figure lurked, obscured by the night. Fear gripped me as I fumbled to secure the doors and windows, the figure persistently attempting entry. The vulnerability of my solitary existence sank in. I was alone, miles away from any semblance of help, and the eerie feeling of being hunted clawed at my senses. Desperation pushed me to reach for my phone, my lifeline to the outside world. But to my dismay, there was no signal. The isolation intensified, and my heart sank as I realized the gravity of the situation. My only hope was to turn on the RV and get the hell out of there. As I turned on my RV, the figure outside remained a menacing presence, refusing to relent. My attempts to scare it and threaten yield no results. After a few minutes, I went full throttle from that place and never again returned. If you're interested, I'll give you coordinates of the place of encounter. Some of you may remember that back in 2014, a man named Eric Frain ambushed two Pennsylvania state troopers, killing one, before fleeing into the woods, armed and intent to cause trouble, and beginning an almost 50-day manhunt in the wet forests of eastern Pennsylvania. That part of Pennsylvania is beautiful but treacherous land. It's rolling, gentle hills with thickets of scrub and hidden bogs. There are a million swamps to traverse, and some of those hills are secretly just piles of shale waiting to slide out from your feet. The tree cover is dense, and you cannot walk a straight line for 50 feet. Mr. Frain knew this land well, you see, and it's why he dodged a massive manhunt for about 6 weeks, often teasing the trackers and their dogs. He laid traps, stored weapon caches, and generally relived Rambo, first blood but with way less fighting. I was working as a wetland scientist scouting out a proposed path for a natural gas pipeline through that land. In the middle of the manhunt, in the very same forest Mr. Frain hid in. So we were in the woods being stopped by search teams, buzzed by helicopters, and, in all likelihood, crossing old trails laid by Mr. Frain himself. When the pipe bomb traps hit the news, I spent every moment scanning the forest floor for tripwires. It was a frightening experience at odds with that land in early autumn. The bushes in the swamp started to turn fiery red while the leaves went orange and yellow. The air is crisp and there's enough green for it to stand out. Everything is covered in a light mist in the morning that burns off by lunchtime, and the sun is clear and warm. There is nothing so off-putting as standing in radiant beauty believing you are in absolute peril. When I was in my early 20s, my friends and I thought it would be a brilliant idea to go night hiking through some woods said to be haunted. It was a very, very, very old town that died out due to some illness. I believe the rumors said tuberculosis. You can walk the horse path, and there are stone foundations on either side of you. Really neat, actually. You were supposed to be able to hear children laughing and dancing in the trees, apparently. Yeah, didn't hear any children laughing, but I did record our whole hike. That night, going over the footage with a friend of mine on his TV, he told me to stop and rewind. I did, and we must have rewound that thing 30 times. There was a face peeking behind trees following us. Not a human face, a weird, gremlin-type face, distorted. Large sunken eyes and a flat nose, pointy chin. We thought we were seeing things, but we watched it so many times, adjusted the brightness and contrast on his TV. Sure as shit. Never went back. While on our honeymoon in June of 1985, my wife and I were backpacking overnight in the Mount Jefferson Wilderness area. We were camped about 3 miles from the trailhead. I think it was called the Whitewater Trailhead. We were camped just off the trail at around 5,300 feet, and there were no other campers around for miles. Sometime during the middle of the night, we were both awakened by very heavy footsteps coming down the trail. I was an experienced backpacker and had encountered deer, elk, and bear before, including having my camp raided by a black bear in the Adirondack Mountains. This creature was definitely bipedal. It took two steps, stopped, took two more steps, stopped, etc. With each set of steps, the creature was clearly much closer to our camp. After the third or fourth set of steps, I let out the loudest scream I could muster. The creature immediately leapt, took two steps away from camp, and was gone. Its actions gave the impression that it was attempting to be stealthy and investigate our camp. After a few minutes we left the tent, we did not actually see the creature because the tent flap was zipped closed, built up the fire, and made lots of noise. Once there was sufficient light after several long hours, we examined the trail for footprints. The footsteps appeared to be coming from the trail, but as conditions had been dry, we found no prints. There were also no other signs of the creature around the area. As an experiment, my wife went into the tent, laid down, and I stomped down the trail as loudly as possible in my lug boots. I am 6'3" and weighed around 220 at that time. She heard my stomping, but it was nothing compared to the night before where we could actually feel the ground shake. Also, despite my best efforts, I was unable to leave any prints on the trail. After thoroughly extinguishing the fire, we packed up and went back to our car. We did not report the incident to the Marion County Sheriff.